On this episode of Chicago Beer Pass, Nick and I head up to Evanston for a visit to Sketchbook, where we get a preview of the new space that should be opening in a couple months. What did we do these last 3 weeks, Zoe? What'd you make it to?
Yeah, because, you know, you got a cork popped out, boom, it flies like fucking 10 feet. We're like, yeah, let's do it.
The legend, Mr. Pete Crowley. I love Pete Crowley, man.
How's that beer? It's what you think it is.
It'll be like the stuff you hear. You ever go to, every time you go to Floyd's, all the music sounds like this.
Raw, raw, raw.
Hey, and welcome to Chicago Beer Pass.
It's go time.
I'm Brad Chmielewski.
Brad, what's up, man? I'm Nick White.
And we're on location here at Sketchbook.
Man, we finally made it, man. We're in beautiful Evanston, just south of downtown, all right, super close, with one of three Evanston breweries, the coolest one.
All right.
Sean Decker from Sketchbook. How are you, man?
I'm good. Thank you guys for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Before we sat down, you know, we've had a couple beers, and then we got a little tour of, you know, kind of what we're here to talk about, the expansion.
So remind me, you've been here before and did a podcast, I think, here before?
No, we've never done a podcast here, yeah.
No, I think I was here one night for the opening night for the Beetle, the rebrand.
Okay, right? Okay, yeah.
I was here for that.
Okay, yeah, got it.
But no, I think we were just...
Which is what, a year ago, maybe?
Yeah. That was a wintertime party.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then I was original Kickstarter person, okay. So I got my name on the wall back there, and so yeah.
Which means you had to come in and do it yourself, and all.
No,
that
I
stuff.
Didn't.
Oh, you
do
did.
It.
We,
I didn't
we
even
did
do
it for
it.
You. Oh no.
I'm not going to Boston.
Oh man. Almost everybody showed up to do their own name, just to tell you. So
that's fine. That's mine's different then. That's funny, but right now we're drinking the gin Kolsch, you know, as we talk about this expansion here.
Yeah, man, a few spirits, not too far from here.
Yep,
that's fine, and it's a Kolsch in a gin barrel.
Yeah,
which I'm digging.
Yeah,
that's fun.
Yeah,
I think I started with the Orange Door, which is an homage to this place. Now, this was way before you were winning awards for design. This was like, I want to say it was a cab depot or something, right?
And it was. This was a cab garage. And before that, it was like a construction office. And I think it was an automobile repair shop at one point and stuff like that. But as you're pointing out, I'm sure what you're referring to is the fact that we operated out of this original brewery. You know, not even this room we're sitting in now is part of it. Just the kind of core brewery was part of it. And this was 4 years ago now when we first started. And Orange Door was one of our first beers. And it remains one of our core beers, but it refers to the Orange Door in the alley where people had to find us because you basically the only way to get to the brewery was through the alley. And it was a kind of a speakeasy-like arrangement where we would do growler and holler fills, and that was it. That's nothing funny. Else. And we had like a community-supported brewery membership program with 150 members that we started with back then. And they would come in and taste the four beers that we had available any given time and make a choice, and then we'd either fulfill their membership or sell them a growler or a howler or however many they wanted, but
right.
There was only beer to go.
Okay.
Yeah, which is quite a strange, unusual way to start, but like I was saying earlier, it's a very organic way to start too. We started literally as a community brewery for the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember going down the alley, I believe it was during one of the Custer days.
Right.
And I was like, I don't know if this is right. I think it says it should be over here. And then there's some people down the way. And then you're like, oh, all right.
The number of people back then that came through the door and just said some version of, oh, my God, we finally found it.
Right.
Because it wasn't so easy.
That does have to be part of the allure, though.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, yeah.
Of course it was.
That is not a story you hear.
It creates...
We've done a few of these, and we'd never hear about, like, when we started, you had to come to the back.
It almost creates the whole, like, the temperance movement, the few spirits.
Sure, of course.
Like, few spirits, you also have to go down, like, an alley, and you're like, I guess there's a
So the Temperance Brewing, you know, which is one of the other main Emerson breweries, they took the name of the Temperance movement, where we perhaps imitated the Temperance movement.
So then you quickly kind of outgrew that alley entrance, and now the main door kind of Is that Main Street?
Yeah. It's, yeah, Main Street, well, no, yeah. Chicago Avenue.
Chicago Avenue. Yeah.
It's across from the Main Street CTA stop.
Right. Okay.
So it's Main Street's right there.
And that's how most people, or that's how everyone is now currently entering.
Of course. Yeah. And so that was about 2 years ago. We did the tap room. That would have been, you know, a big change for us. We upped our brewing system at that point. We'd been running with, you know, 3 7-barrel fermenters, 1 7-barrel brew system. We added, I think, 4 15-barrel fermenters at that point. So which is, you know, it's more than doubling in size.
Okay.
It's tripling in size, actually, is what it was. And, you know, a lot of that was the tap room, but at that point we were also kind of self-distributing, like quite a bit, particularly in the local Evanston thing.
Okay.
And then the beginning of last year, so not 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, we then went with a group of distributors and began distributing there. We were just, you know, we had over 120 accounts. It was Cez and I and our first employee, you know, Connor, who's, you know, one of our main brewers, and in a, you know, a Ford F-150 van, and us literally driving, you know, two cases of beer up to Mundelein or two cases of beer. You know, it was just nuts. Yeah.
I'm sure that gets...
Yeah, yeah.
Just unsustainable after
it is. You know, it's just it doesn't, you know, the math doesn't work, the time doesn't work, that it sucks as a lifestyle, you know, the whole thing. Yeah. Just, you know, yeah.
Now, Sean, are you from Evanston? Like, how did this Chicago and Main Street situation all come to be?
Yeah, so I grew up in Evanston. I grew up in Pennsylvania, but I moved to Evanston for graduate school at Northwestern, which was like 35 years ago. And pretty much have been here ever since. I went to school for electronic music composition at Northwestern, got a doctorate from them, worked at Northwestern in the computer music lab kind of, you know, for I guess 4 years, and then got a job teaching at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago, which is what I still do.
Okay.
So I teach electronic music and art and things like that there. So I've been here more years than I've been anywhere else.
Right
on the planet, so effectively, yes.
Yeah. I tell you, the beaches are nice up here, man.
Yeah,
I've ditched a couple of days of work, and you know,
yeah,
I like Chicago beaches. You come to Evanston, you know, it's a little nicer,
a little chiller.
Yeah. You might need a little coin to enter the beach. I think that's part of why it's nicer.
Oh yeah, you gotta pay.
You gotta pay to play in Evanston, baby.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, it's nice to get the residents get a, you know, you pay for it, but you get a pass, you know. But those beaches have gotten pretty small, so, you know, man, smallest I've ever seen. So. that lake is rising like crazy.
I know, yeah, it's kind of crazy.
So anyway, and then you know, the tap room now is so crazy busy, you know, that I would say almost any weekday night, it's certainly impossible to get a seat. Sometimes it's impossible to get in the door. It's so busy. So that's basically, that's kind of basically where we're at now is having to expand our tap room.
Okay.
So that's the big project now, is that the dentist, interestingly enough, named Curry also. Sean Curry is just walking in the door.
Mr. Sean Curry.
So the Dr. Curry next door. I don't know what her first name is, but it's been a dentist who's been there for a long time. Just decided to great for us, just decided to buy a building and move. And so we suddenly had the opportunity to lease the adjacent office right next to where the tap room is currently. And it's basically twice the size of the tap room. And so we're going to expand into that. We're going to create openings in the walls between. We're working with a really nice designer, Joseph Altschut, who's from Could Be Design, is the name of it. And it's kind of a graphic designer. They actually did Twisted Hippo, if you know their tap room. Really, really good with sort of floor kind of graphics. And so, you know, we're working with them to kind of create a really nice space with a local Evanston muralist. So we're trying to create a really, really nice kind of much expanded tap room. So we'll go from about 20 seats up to about 100 seats in the new tap room. Giant difference.
It's always busy in the weeknight. We're Tuesday night and people are like, is there a table? Like, where can we sit down?
Yeah, no, it's difficult.
Sean Curry, where's your beer, man? What are you doing right now, man?
Just walked in, I had family dinner. I heard you call me out last week saying I wasn't going to be there. Sure. Wait, what you guys are touching on is the expansion of the tap room. One of the things that we've always noticed since we opened up the original tap room is we have people coming in, they kind of look in the door and they see that we're wall to wall and they like walk right back out. So one of the big things that
being a community supported brewery, we want to be able to support the community. And so having people walk in and then have to walk right back out, we've always felt bad working in the tap room that people can't come in and enjoy
least buy beer to go, please.
You don't want to go and run up. There's been times I've run out there, I was like, no, you can, like, somebody's leaving the table right now, we're about to clear it off, you can come in. I've been here with my friends and family and I've walked out and people walk in and I see them, I'm like, you know, there's spaces are going to be opening up, it turns around pretty fast. And so this new expansion is going to be able to allow us to see the people that are coming in and not have to turn anybody away, which is great.
I mean, a good example of that is we do a second Saturday tour every Saturday, which you can sign up online. It typically sells out. You know, we take 20 people. And so the 20 people are going to show up, you know, 3 o'clock on a Saturday. And you can kind of do the math. When that tour gets out at 4 o'clock, and there's a 20-seat tap room and you're doing a tour of 20 people, you know, it becomes basically anybody from the neighborhood who happens to unfortunately walk in at that moment, you know, is they're pretty much screwed. You know, they're not going to get a seat. They're probably not going to even stand, you know.
It's like trying to get toothpaste back into a toothpaste tube.
So to speak. So that's a big issue for us. We really are, you know, like I said, an organic neighborhood driven kind of brewery, and so, you know, it's, this is part of why we're doing this expansion.
Was the crew you have now, like, we know Sean, we know you, we know the brewmaster,
says
yeah, you know Ted.
Ted Perez. Was that the crew when you guys, when this started in 2014?
So when we started in 2014, it was Cez and I as the principals, but then we gathered together a group of, mostly we had met in the Emerson Homebrew Club. You know, so it was a group of homebrewers that we knew from the club. That would be Sean Curry and Ted Perez and
Matt Kozlowski,
who's, you know, since moved out to the East Coast. A friend of mine, Mike Ensdorf. And then a number of, who was an art person and a beer person that I'd known, who hadn't really been, he's not really a homebrewer, but he's a kind of a beer person otherwise. And then we had a group of family people. So some of my family, some of Cez's family, some of Cez's wife's, Amy's family, et cetera, jumped in and did money. And so that was kind of, those people were doing money, and the people from the homebrew club were doing both money and time. So they basically were going to do 7 hours a week. Because we essentially had no employees. So Cez and I were doing all the brewing. We were doing most of everything, running the business, et cetera. We needed people. We had no bartenders. We had no nothing. So we all took shifts in the bar, you know, et cetera, like filling growlers and hollers and stuff like that.
Yeah, when we first Caesar would get here at 4 o'clock in the morning, and then Sean would roll in at like 9 and take over. And
we both had day jobs still. So, you know, he went on the clock at around 9 or so. So he would start the brew at 4. I would show up at 9. I would take it to the end. He would get off work. We'd both clean up together. You know, that was kind of the thing. And because I taught it, you know, I'm an academic, we would always brew in my days when I wasn't teaching in downtown. So I had a couple of open days in my schedule, and that's basically what we did for the first year.
Yeah, with that first year, not having the tap room, people were able to come in Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays to fill up growlers. And that's what started our CSB. Yeah. People were coming down the alleyway, and we told them to find the orange door, and they come in through the orange door, follow the signs back to the brewery, and they're actually walking in. We had a 6 tap kegerator, basically, or, you know, tap lines that we were having just our 6 to 8 beers.
Oh, just
on draft.
Four to six, even, really.
Yeah, in the very beginning it was 4 to 6, and then we had to get another kegerator to put 2 more styles on, and then the city would allow people to try 6 ounces at a time to figure out what they wanted.
Two ounces at a time. Yeah, you're right.
A total of 6 ounces served to decide what they wanted to take in their growlers to head home. And so, you know, figuring that out when you have 8 different beers on draft, now you're figuring out what a 1 ounce pour tastes like and if people are going to make a good decision for that. But it was the other, our 6 families and the friends that were coming in, and, you know, Amy's uncles would come in and help us out. So it was just us from, you know, 4 hours on Thursdays, 4 hours on Saturdays, 6 hours on, or no, sorry, 4 hours on Fridays, 6 hours on Saturdays, and 6 hours on Sundays.
Yeah, I think it's 4 hours on Sundays.
Yeah, and just trying to figure out how we were going to staff that. Yeah.
And then we would do all of our brewing Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, you know, so we basically, because we're using the brewery also for the tasting room. So but you guys can't really have a brew day and then have a tasting day also. So
you guys seem like you were the first place to do that CSB.
The Guile was actually
the Guile
was first. Okay. Yeah. I couldn't remember.
We kind of got the idea from them.
Okay.
I mean, I would say ours was I don't know. Hard to say.
They started first. Kevin talked to Caesar, and I talked to Kevin a little bit about it in the beginning, and we do our CSB a little bit differently than they did. They cap theirs at a certain amount, and they're never going over that certain amount. So once one person decides we're not going to, I don't know if that's still how they did it, but when I was actually a member of their original CSB, and so they capped it at 150 people. And then once somebody drops off and didn't renew, they contacted a wait list. Yeah. For us, we've been able to, luckily,
add people
each session that we're going on, because we're not at a capacity where we have to cap it off, which is great, but we also want to have more people have that advantage to be able to come in and join.
We're up at about 475 now.
Wow, that's good.
Yeah.
And that's great for, as a brewery, you're saying, just kind of like fund yourself, you know, kind of like that's money, you know, right?
Yeah.
That's coming in,
yeah.
So it helps a lot
when
planning for things
sure,
like an expansion.
Yeah.
These homebrew clubs are powerful stuff, man. I remember there's another brewery that had Evanston homebrew roots. I think it was called like Mad Mouse or something.
So, yeah, Phil Zielinski,
Phil,
who was the head brewer at
Mad
Mouse. But then Mike Smiley over at Smiley Brothers was also a member of the homebrew club.
And
Josh Gilbert over at Temperance
was
also
a member. And Phil hosted that homebrew club.
He was the original person
when he was
at
Prairie
Moon.
And
myself.
So it's all interconnected.
Dan Lichtfield over at D-Licked up at Dip and Nuevo. That was the original part of the Evanston homebrew club.
What's that, Dip and Nuevo?
Dip and Nuevo is a Mexican restaurant up in Wilmette. And he
they have
brews
kind of an in-house brewery.
He has an in-house brewery that they do two barrels at a time.
Ah, I didn't even.
No.
The are they in the book?
Yeah. Right. Are they in the book?
we helped him out a lot, you know, from everything from cleaning kegs and, you know, doing wort and like all kinds of stuff for him, to get going.
Well, we did,
and we made their beer for a while before he got started because they needed to have something, and then he took it over. When he got his system together.
I remember Chicago Beer Society, not necessarily a homebrew group, but they were saying how like they got Goose started making Bourbon County Stout because of them. Like these little groups are really powerful, man.
Yeah.
Well, it's the community component of it. I mean, in Chicago, there's a lot of homebrewers that are in within a lot of different groups. So you've got a lot of different individual sections of Chicago that have their homebrew clubs that are there. And that's really, if you see like the Chicago Beer Society and the email chains that go on with that, that's really driving like what's going on, what's new, where do you go? And everybody helps out within the homebrew club. Before, we were all helping each other out with brew days. Like somebody would say, like, I need this grain now. And we're like, cool, I've got it. Come on over. Same thing here. It's like when we needed help in the very beginning, we had homebrewers that were coming in and helping us out.
Yeah.
So we wanted to know people the new beer behind the bar, and they kind of come in for a quick onboarding for 10, 15 minutes. It's like, this is what we've got. This is in style. These are the hops. And they're able to talk to people like that. And it's good having that kind of connection because they're always wanting to know what's going on with a production brewery, and so they're there to help out. And kind of in the beginning, it was really, really important for us to have our friends that can come over and it's like, hey, can you drive this over there? Can you go get these and bring them back here?
Yeah, and we got a lot of help from the big breweries too.
Yeah,
all the time. So Half Acre Revolution, etc.
We're
super great. Like, I mean, that's not unusual.
You mentioned Goose, like people talk all the time, like, oh, the yeast lab or
their
lab.
They let us do stuff in their lab, for instance. Yeah, exactly. So another thing, when you talk about the sort of CSB and the members and the local thing, is we were just talking about it before we started going on mic here, which was the Kickstarter we just did.
Yeah.
So in the beginning, we did a Kickstarter, and that's kind of one of the things that actually really propelled this further along really early. There were two things. One was the CSB members. The other was the Kickstarter that we did, you know, when we first started to raise money.
Brad, I'll say thank you for that, because I know you were original.
An original supporter. And, you know, that kind of quickly hit its goal, which I think was 15,000. And then we raised it another 10,000 to add kind of more sustainable equipment so that we can kind of push the sustainability factor a bit deeper. And we raised an additional, I believe it was 10,000 for that. That was back when we weren't even really a known entity at that point. Nobody really knew what kind of beer we were going to make, whatever. It was strictly on the basis of being excited about a local brewery. Although in that Kickstarter, we also got a lot of people from random people from all over the place who just liked the idea.
I would say that's why I chipped in. It was kind of like, I'm down for a new brewery. I'll throw in a little bit here. Like, why not? Yeah. Like, let's
see what happens. This was back when there were a lot of new breweries, but it wasn't like now where there's just like crazy numbers of new breweries. So yeah,
like every week.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. But anyway, so for the new tap room, we also did a Kickstarter, which opened about 3 weeks ago, and we also set a $15,000 goal, and it's basically the main push of that Kickstarter was acoustic treatment in the brewery, because for us, we don't do TVs. We want people to, you know, be able to talk. And we feel like in a lot of tap rooms, it's just so loud between the music and the bad acoustics that everyone's just shouting each other constantly, you know. And so we're trying to not do that. But it costs a lot of money, which is why most people don't do it. So we're going to spend some money on that, on a good speaker system for the same exact reason. Instead of two big PA speakers centered, you know, we're going to do a lot of distributed smaller speakers so that you don't have to play it so loud to kind of get coverage everywhere. But once again, it's a lot more expensive to do, you know. Have a local muralist come in and do a nice big mural, you know. Talked about better design, talked about better furniture. So instead of kind of buying those cheapest black metal chairs that you see in like 95% of all new breweries, you know the ones I mean, right? The black kind of four-leg metal things. But of actually getting some kind of comfier chairs, maybe with a softer...
I'm partial to black cherry finish, if anyone's wondering.
Black cherry finish?
What I want.
Wood? I'll look to see if you're...
So you're into wood chairs, huh? Yeah. But we're doing DIY furniture like we've done before. So we're doing these beautiful wood tables, which is... Cesar's father is up from Brazil, and he's been kind of rehabbing these old, as I was telling you before, these old truck beds that are just gorgeous. He's such a craftsman, so it's really fun to do that. So, but anyway, so this $15,000 Kickstarter, based around kind of making this a great space for people who are in a conversational space, a community space, it completely sold out, and I think it was 26 hours, 28 hours, something like that.
It was like 40. So the first one was 5 days. This one, I think we announced it was 40 hours completely funded.
It was a day and a half. Yeah. It was less than 2 days, you know, fully funded. So, you know, and then we had to expand that. So so clearly, in this time, it was truly mostly local people. You know, it was it wasn't a lot of kind of random, long-distance kind of Kickstarter pledges. These were people who already came to the tap room or were already members pledging. And you could see it. We knew a lot of the names on this, you know, on this list.
Well, it almost goes back to Nick talking about the beaches. The people that are here want to make sure the beaches stay nice and people can go to them. They want to make sure their breweries, their restaurants stay nice. Yeah. And like, oh, we want a nice place to go to. We don't want a place with wood, like, crappy chairs
They want us to spend money on the things that are beyond just a place to drink beer, you know, that are going to make it a good place to hear music, to kind of, you know, talk to your friends, to hang out and play games.
I can drink beer at my house.
They were into they were into a catering space so we could bring in, you know, interesting food, pop-up food, like all of these kinds of things is what they really wanted.
A lot of the donors for this, it's kind of fun with it being mostly community or local people, is that they're actually taking a vested interest in a place that they want to go to.
Yeah.
And they can go in there and like, I donated this Kickstarter, and it's like, I was able to help get that mural, or I was able to help to get the sound system. Like, this is great. And it's kind of like when you recommend a good restaurant, like, you know that the restaurant's going to have good food, but you want to be that person that the person remembers that recommended that place. So like, they're the ones that are putting in their money to make sure that we can make it the best place for them.
Mm-hmm. And they know they're going to get a very nicely designed hoodie out of it as well, you know.
There's always the perks.
No, I mean, besides the perks. We're doing a bunch of special design, which, you know, is another great way of kind of, you know, being part of it. So
When you talk about towns like Evanston or Oak Park, they don't really feel like suburbs. They feel like little cities because
or neighborhoods of Chicago
a good vibe. So that's really cool that you guys are pulling that off.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we touched on it a little bit, but it wasn't stuff. It was things that you would like to have. It wasn't, if it didn't get funded, this wasn't happening. So
it wasn't critical to having a tap room.
Because so much of Kickstarter relies on...
And we might have gotten to it, but we might not too. You know, it's so hard once you get going. You can definitely have a tap room. We probably would not, you know, do better or worse if we didn't have these things, but it would make the place a lot nicer for the people who were there. And it would change the kind of activities that it was really comfortable to do in there. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the sound thing is a real big deal, actually. So, you know.
Making a more comfortable community type space, like inviting people in, making it more comfortable for them to be able to come in and feel like they're welcome and stuff like that. That's one of the bigger things for it.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's got to be more fun and easier to build out just a tap room than it is a brewery where you have to, there's a lot of stuff you got to worry about. Then like moving all the equipment into like another room.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is here, we're actually keeping our old bar, just expanding it a little bit. Yeah. We're gonna so lengthen it a little.
Don't have to run new line.
Yeah, so a lot of that kind of stuff, other than building a couple of bathrooms and things, which contractors are super good at, you know, we don't have to take on too much of that stuff. So it's nice, yeah.
You lucked out the dentist.
Yeah, no, exactly. Like that. Yeah. No, and literally, we probably could have knocked some holes in the wall and put a bunch of tables in there and a bunch of track laying, and but we're not going to do that. You know,
the whole new reason for the little spitballs at the end of the tables.
Yeah. You guys are almost pulling like a half acre kind of thing, taking over the block in a sense. Yeah. Like, just keep moving down.
Yeah. So. Although, if you still look at the size of this, I think the overall size of this is certainly no bigger than a lot of breweries' tap rooms, you know. Like, if you looked at Temperance's tap room size, I think it's probably, this sort of equals it now.
Okay.
It's certainly nowhere near as big as Smiley's is, so, you know, it's like...
Yeah, their place looks like a...
It's huge.
Like a cabin.
Yeah.
Gigantic. Multiple floors.
Cabin hotel or something, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you look at, you go out to Salamoth, their tap room is probably, the seating area is probably about the same size as what we currently have.
Yeah, it's pretty
small. Yeah. So it's pretty small and quaint.
It's a measure of how insanely small our current is, basically, is what it is. Yeah.
And that's been the one thing that everybody has said. It's like, love the beers, love the people, staff is great, get more space. Like, that's a tiny tavern.
Salamoth can get away with it because they're not on a street that people are walking by. Like, you got to drive there, you're only going to have a couple beers, and then you got to go. Here, you're walking, you get off the train. It's more of a place to go, and who knows what happens from there.
And it's both a destination and, you know, there's a lot of local regulars who, you know, this is one of their main kind of social spaces, you know, they come here a lot. So, you know.
How long has it been since the rebrand? You guys are one of the few crews to have, like, a successful rebrand of your logo. I mean, who else? Like,
2 years since we rebranded. We rebranded right before, and you guys, I think you guys were here for that when we rebranded. Yeah. It was our third anniversary of... the brewery.
That's right. Almost 2 years. I think it's 2 years kind of come like September, October, somewhere in there, November.
Yeah.
Right? Because I believe that rebrand party was somewhere kind of...
It's close to our third anniversary.
Yeah. October, November, somewhere in there.
Our anniversary of the tap room, our third anniversary of the brewery.
Okay.
That's when we had done that.
It was a good thing that we did it. Yeah. You know, we were super happy with, Good Beer Hunting did the basic work. It's turned out to be a super flexible system that we can use with a good solid kind of logo. You know, we still have some people who really say they miss the old logo, but you know, it's kind of
looking
like,
at it in the corner there. Yeah.
Yeah. But generally speaking, it's worked really well, and it's been flexible for us, easy to work with. So we've been quite happy with it.
Yeah, the old logo, I'm sure, has a little bit more of a, I don't know, independent kind of vibe to it, where the new one, it's designery, but it's good. It, like you said, it has more uses. So
and you know, we have Beth, who's our in-house designer here, who's really good at kind of building up can designs using the template that we got from Good Beer Hunting, and now it's, you know, she basically does most of our short run of cans, where we do just, you know, small one-off kind of beers and cans and things like that. Mm-hmm. So,
speaking of one-off beers and stuff, you guys seem to, every time I'm up here, there's something new. It is.
Actually, we have a new one in cans up in the tap room right now, the third iteration of the Hop Thirsty Void, which is the double hazy, double hazy IPA.
It's essentially the double insufficient clearance.
Double insufficient clearance.
Essentially.
That has Michigan Copper hops. Specifically in this batch, this is the third iteration that we did of that that specific beer.
Okay, I think it came up. It was either the first one or the second one with the mushroom caps.
That was stout. That was the turbulence. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And then so whatever, also a Hop Void was released on that same weekend or time.
Yeah, the second iteration. Okay. Hop Thirsty Void.
This place smelled like maple syrup for weeks after we did that beer, man. It's just crazy.
That mushroom version was real
crazy.
Good.
Yeah. It was crazy.
Second most expensive beer, I think Caesar was saying.
Oh, really?
It was just because of the cost of the mushrooms. And the mushrooms are The mushrooms that are used, the candy cat mushrooms, I actually, because of how anal retentive and information seeking I am, so it's hard to harvest those mushrooms because the areas in the Pacific Northwest that the mushrooms grow actually smell insanely like maple syrup when they go to, when yep. the fruit comes out.
So if anyone, animals go like crazy. If anyone listening to this is confused, the basic taste of these mushrooms imitates maple syrup.
Correct. Hmm.
And yeah. so it's that's why the place smelled like maple syrup after yeah. we did it. And, you know, so it's the mushrooms with the maple syrup taste, just correct. So you understand.
Wow. Yeah. So yeah. these mushrooms, as soon as they pop out of the ground, they start letting off this aroma, and animals go to it like crazy because, you know, everybody wants sweet
yeah.
stuff. And so foragers that look for these have to know where these mushrooms are growing and need to grab them before the animals start getting them. So they're like literally out there camping, waiting for this time of year that they start to pop out of the ground and they start grabbing them like crazy. And so they go for like $40 yeah. a dried ounce is like $40. No, $400 a dried ounce of this mushroom.
I wonder if they could be grown domestically. That's interesting. Yeah,
I'm sure that they could be, but this is what I was reading for like the whole history of this. And these are mostly a culinary mushroom that a lot of restaurants will use for like savory desserts, and they put the mushrooms in there as opposed to using maple syrup themselves.
Right.
Yeah. So it's kind of cool. And
there's also no sugar. That's the other crazy thing.
No sugar.
No sugar. So, yeah.
And no fear of bottles or cans blowing up because there's no added maple syrup to the beer that allows the yeast that's left around that could re-ferment and stuff like that. So you have no problem.
These things are important. You know?
Yeah.
The cost, the price we'll pay to make sure that our cans don't blow up. The beer tastes really, really good.
No nucleation.
No nucleation.
So yeah, that beer, that would be fun. But yeah, right, we said we were drinking this gin Kolsch and this super fun beer to have. And,
yeah, I like that, the hot forward styles, but then these one-off styles are interesting and keep you, you know, looking forward to the hot forward styles.
Right?
Pull me off the path, but then bring me back with these reliable hot forward beers.
Yeah. I'm kind of a more of a traditionalist myself. I mean, I love just the straight Kolsch, personally. I mean, I have to say. So, I mean, I'm not saying that all these other things aren't good. It's just that I'm such a traditionalist that this is a fantastic Kolsch. This Kolsch we make, I think, personally. And
it's one of my favorites. It's one of my summer crushes. That, the Amistosa, and the one we can have it, the California, the Cosmic Cali that we have.
The California Common, yeah.
Which we do with Galaxy Hops. Those are my summer beers. Those are the ones I love.
And Twice Lucky, which is just a basic English bitter.
I think it's good. You're seeing like kind of a comeback on that as people get a little burnt out on haze and kind of, especially summertime. So it's like, I just need something to quench
that
thirst. That's not White Claw.
No, I'm a huge fan of that.
Right on, man.
That's awesome. So when's the expansion supposed to open, or what's the hope for it?
Well, I think I was telling you all earlier today, we just put the building permit up today. It's amazing how long it took to get to the building permit stage, you know, so... it's going to be a lot less work actually doing the build out than it was getting to the point of being able to get the building permit. So we have a loan we have to kind of work out. It'll take a few weeks probably at this point. And then they'll start construction, and it's really not a lot. A lot of it's going to be our muralist, who needs about 10 days and, you know, finalizing like a lot of these design details and to what degree, you know, we do that. And our hope is we'll do all of that, then we'll, and keep operating like normal. And then we'll, you know, have a weekend where we'll basically open up those two openings in the wall and do the finish work around it. And then probably have to seal that off for a couple of days until we get city approval and a certificate of occupancy.
Okay.
And then once we've got that, it should go. And so we were originally saying September. In my head, I was thinking October. My head was probably smarter than my mouth on this one. So, you know, if we can make it by the end of October, I'd be pretty excited. We certainly want it to be open by Thanksgiving.
Right.
Let's put it that way.
Hopefully, advantage of the garage door.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. And hopefully, early enough that we can open that garage door once or twice before we shut it for the winter. Yes, exactly. Yeah. You got it.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, this has been great.
This was cool, man. We finally made it up here, man. We've been talking about it for a while. Yeah. See this guy. See this guy all the downtown and merchandise and art, man.
Oh, is that where you see each other?
Yeah. I'm down there during the day, too.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
My current practice is right across the street.
So. Okay.
I'm on 18. I'm at Bud Long. More than three times I see this guy there.
Okay.
So funny.
You still haven't gone for the extra hot head?
Yeah, there's no way. The off the menu spice level at Bud Long? No way. No way.
That's me every single time.
Really?
Yeah. You know how you said you're a traditionalist? I like to go for the extreme.
Yeah. Well, I knew that about you already. Yeah. So, yeah.
All right. So look for October really or opening. Don't come around 4 o'clock on Saturdays to the tap room.
Second Saturday. Other than that, okay. We're safe. Yeah.
You're good. Yeah. Always great beer. You can grab stuff to go. You can join the CSB too. You guys have opening. So yeah.
Just steps from the Purple Line.
Right across the street.
And the Metro.
And the Metro.
And the Metro both. So yeah.
And I heard that Uber and Lyft brings you right to our front door.
Oh. How about
They'll
that?
They'll take you away from our front door too.
Not to our alley. Not to our alley door.
Awesome. Well, we'll be back with another episode next week. I'm sure Sean Curry will be correcting us on our mistakes that we make.
We need corrections. Come back
when we have the chat remote. That would be really fun. To do that. So,
Sean Decker, Sean Curry,
the Seans.
It's been a pleasure, man.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you both.
Cheers.
Cheers. Yeah, cheers.